We're in week three of our series, Missions, Go Into All the World, where we're looking at where God is working around the world. As we've looked at Matthew 28 these last couple of weeks, where Jesus commands us, and it's actually here the prayer for missions, right? Jesus said to them, "All authority in heaven and earth has been given to me. Go therefore and make disciples of all nations, baptizing them in the name of the Father and the Son and of the Holy Spirit, teaching them to observe all that I have commanded you, and behold, I am with you always to the end of the age." And I don't want to get too far from home this week because there's just some things that I've been thinking about that I want to bring it back to a really practical conversation about understanding our young people. And it's like, what does it have to do with missions? Well, you know, it's the mission trips that many churches undertake where we send students off with adults and lean into life-changing encounters. Let me begin with a couple questions. What was the most defining moment for you as a teenager? You know, was it a big win or was it a big loss? And then what questions about life and faith did that moment stir within you? And then also, when you think back to that moment, what did adults in your life do that helped clarify, if you will, or what do you wish the adults had done that maybe would have helped? Because I think in all these things, as we think about life, it really is these larger questions that we're all wrestling through, especially coming out of the global pandemic. And when we look at young people in particular, is the questions they're asking. Our friends at Fuller Youth Institute in California, at Fuller Seminary, have a new book coming out this week, entitled Three Big Questions That Change Every Teenager.
I'm inspired by the young people in my life, by their grit, by their passion for justice, by their innovative solutions. I want to be there for the young people I care about, but it's not always easy. I often wonder if I'm really connecting. I wish our conversations went deeper, that I wasn't guessing what to say next. I know teenagers need real conversations about what's important to them, troubling them, inspiring them.
Teenagers are full of questions. The best conversations happen when we get to the question beneath the questions. Those are the moments that change teenagers and us. Young people are asking three big questions.
Who am I?
Who am I?
Who am I?
Where do I fit?
Where do I fit?
Where do I fit?
What difference can I make?
What difference can I make?
Three Big Questions That Change Every Teenager is a book that gives you what you need to connect with the young people you care about most, so you're equipped to help them find Jesus' answers to their big questions of identity, belonging, and purpose.
Now, I want to argue that these same questions will actually change all of us if we lean into it. And it's part of the reason why in the middle of the series on missions, I just want to stop in a moment because of how we spend our time and our energies to think about what it is that God's asking us to do. Now, when we think about working with youth, and the Fuller Youth Institute has done some amazing work. We've actually worked through a couple of their books here in the church. A number of years ago, we worked through the book Growing Young, just looking at those aspects of what we need to have as a church to be able to grow the church and to engage our young people. Obviously, the pandemic hasn't helped that, and so we've all struggled over these many months to begin to put back on track. There's three questions that Kara Powell and Brad Griffin sort of helped drive down to help us better understand what it is that we're all looking for, I believe. And in their research, they 100 students. They had a two-hour interview with 27 students in particular, and these were students predominantly of color. They were 7 who were Caucasian and then 20 that were not. And it's interesting, the three things that they sort of landed on is this idea that every student is asking the question, who am I? And really wrestling with this idea of identity. The second question is around the area of belonging, being part of something, and asking the question, where do I fit? And then finally, the big question of purpose, what difference can I make? And so when we look at these interviews and we pull out the data that they've learned, the research and sort of has underscored, first of all, culturally, when we look at it, just as the world understands it, current answers are an understanding around this idea of identity, this idea of I am what? I am what others expect. So there's this performance-based understanding that we have on how we lean into life, whether we're a student or we're an adult. And then I think where the reality really meets the road is, and I see this in everyone that I talk to be quite honest, when we lean into really honest conversations, is that I'm not enough. And you can fill in the blank with whatever, that I'm not smart enough, that I'm not pretty enough, that I'm not athletic enough, that there's these expectations that others place upon us that make us feel inadequate. And even when you think about the 2020 Olympics and what took place this week with Simone Biles pulling out of the athletic competition, and regardless of what your opinion about that is, it's just interesting that there's been so much controversy that surrounds us. And yet we know that those things don't determine who we are. In fact, when we move to understanding what Jesus wants us to understand, when we see the answer that he is offering us, when we talk about the idea of identity, the phrase I want us to embrace is that with Jesus we are enough, that we don't need anything else plus Jesus, that in our relationship with Jesus, and so it goes back to that thread that we keep weaving through all these conversations over these many months, that it's this reality that if we trust in him, we are enough to be whatever it is he's asking us to be. What he's done for us through his redemption and the restoration that comes through his sitting in authority in heaven. Now, when we look at sort of this understanding of discipleship, and basically when we see what that's really all about, that it's this journey that we're on, and I like this diagram here from our friends at Fuller, and really what is discipleship? Well, it's moving from our understanding and the answers we have to life to what are the Jesus or the Christ-centered answers. And it's a constant journey as we grow and mature of understanding what it is that he's doing in and through us. When we think about the current answers to how we belong, the second question, do I fit? This idea, you know, when I feel safe to be who I am, whether you're a student or an adult, it's that sense of knowing that I have a place and I have a place where I know I can be safe. And it's our shared experiences together, or maybe a shared characteristic. We like music, you know, we play an instrument, whatever it might be. And then when we really look at it, though, it's about belonging with God's people. That's the Christ-centered answer, is that we belong to a faith community where we encourage each other to grow. Because it's in that context that, you know, we want to be safe, and when we're with God's people, there's a sense of community we have that's Jesus-centered, and even the joy that we take in watching our young people serve like they did last night at St. Luke's, and as we've done many times together. And really what's the beauty of it isn't just the students finding a sense of belonging, but we all do as we lean into the common mission of blessing our neighbors with a warm meal. Now, when we look at the idea of purpose, the current understanding of that is that I can make a difference. And how do we do that? Well, it's when I'm helping others, right? And so again, as we think about what comes out of serving those in need, like last night, or like through our Pots and Pans ministry through Love, Inc. But there's also this understanding that when I follow the script, and what I mean by that is that when we do what others want us to do, whether it's a coach in practicing the right drills and understanding that, or a teacher that wants us to do the particular kind of homework in a certain way so we learn how to do the math or whatever it is, diagram the sentences out, whatever it might be, or even a pastor, the idea of the things that we're inviting you into within the walls of the church to be a faithful participant in the community of faith. When we look at purpose as Jesus understands it, it really is this idea that we've been invited into God's greater story, that God is writing and working in the world, and he invites us in to be a part of that. Our friends at Fuller have sort of drilled it down this way. So when we talk about identity, it's simply this idea of enough, or this idea of belonging, or being with someone. The idea of purpose is this idea of story. And so when we look at this, we see very clearly that when we place ourselves in God's story, then we understand that he's invited us to play a part. And his desire is for us to lean into that together. And again, as we began with the prayer of missions, where Jesus is sending us out to the world. And yet what's interesting in all this is that there is a question that each of us sort of work through, right? Not when we think about this list, about the question around our identity or our belonging or our purpose. There's one of these questions that for each of us, it leads out. Yeah, where we work out of sort of our weakness, where we struggle with who we are. We struggle with maybe how we're connected, or we struggle with what purpose do I find in life right now. And it's interesting, I would suggest, and it's based on their research also, is that, you know, in our established churches, our traditional churches especially, there's been real difficulty over the many decades of helping others lead us into community. One of the things that the pandemic did was sort of level the ground, and that the programs that many churches had have now been sort of set aside as we're leaning into just being in community with each other. And at the same time, there's also, I think, a shift coming. And again, that's why we're looking at this, that is going to have an impact on how discipleship is done. The idea of having an online experience, that it can't simply be about you watching someone speak like me, that really it's the next step, if you will, of going deeper, of engaging in harder questions about how do I live my life effectively and how do we do it together to make a difference in the world. Let me try it this way. I think that one of the things that we're seeing in a very clear way, and again, this comes out of the research that, of our friends at Fuller, is that we've got to move from knowing a person's name to actually knowing a person's pain and their dreams. I think that we've lived, and it's been the tension of where we've lived with technology and just all that we've been about, that we really need to learn each other's story and what God is doing. It's interesting, our friends in the Catholic tradition, they actually have this word that they use when they talk about discipleship, about accompanying someone on their faith journey. And I guess, too, as I said before, is that, yes, this book is about how to talk to a teenager, but I really think it cuts across generational lines, because I think we all want to be known, right? We all want to be valued for who we are and how God's wired us, how he's created us, what our passions are, our desires are. And yet we know, I just had a conversation a couple weeks ago with someone who was doing the census tracking for locally here, and they were telling me that as they were out knocking on doors during the census, that they were talking to people where for the first time, that was the first time in literally weeks that somebody had human interaction, not via a phone, not by a door knock. And so when we think about that, it's pretty extraordinary to think that people have gone a whole day without talking to anyone. And we know we're wired to be in community. And we know, too, that the internet can play a role in that, and it's been an amazing tool, if you will. But it's also been a hurtful tool. There's all sorts of amazing things where you can express yourself. But then in the idea of expressing yourself, there's also the comparison that comes, and maybe I'm not good enough, again, playing back into that identity issue. It's interesting that Kara told a story about an event that happened in Nashville after George Floyd's death, where six young ladies, through social media, organized a social justice rally with some 10,000 people, and they had never met each other. They did it entirely online. And so we can see the power of social media, and yet we need to be reminded that we're more than a hashtag, that we're more than what pictures and what content we post online. It's interesting that when we think about Generation Z, specifically those are young people from ages 6 to 24, that there's three verbs they've come up with currently to sort of describe that age group. First of all, they're anxious, and what they're seeing is a real need for mental health concerns. They're adaptive, which I think is truly seen in the creative nature of our young people and their passions. And then finally, the diversity that exists. And I think we need to be reminded that for the first time, as we did the census of 2020, that what came out of that is that for the first time, 50% of those under the age of 18 are Caucasian, and the other 50% are people of color. And that, you can see, is a beginning of a shift in how we will see our nation and the fabric of our nation. And there's a beauty in that, but there's also a deeper need for understanding that we each have. Now, there's all sorts of other things we could talk about in terms of around the issue of sex and all that's there, or the issue of technology. And yet, when we think about why to even have this conversation, it's because of the family and of the faith community that it influences who we are. I mean, the problem is, though, for our young people, there is a contradiction, if you will, in terms of the expectations that people have. If you think about a student in high school, the expectation from the mom and dad is to get into the best college, so get the best grades. If they're playing a sport, soccer or baseball, football, the coach's perspective is you need to produce a winning season. And then when they come to the church, we're telling them they need to love God and go out into all the world. And I think that's sort of a confusing moment for our young people. And so part of our task as the church is to partner with parents, and that's why we're even having this conversation this morning, to understand that if we're going to tell our young people and encourage them to go into all the world, is that we have to help them do that. We have to walk alongside and provide all the support we can. I really appreciate this statement from Kara as we wrap up at Fuller. They want us to see that the church is the rehearsal, if you will, for life. Is that the church is where we get to act out our everyday faith. And that, you know, it's not just here in the building on Sunday morning or online here on Sunday morning, but it actually is taking and building a sense of community and then investing in others. And so with that, we need to simply land on this idea is that we are enough when we are with God's people. And so I hope this has been helpful as we think about just where we find ourselves and the tasks that are ahead of us, and as we take and embrace the Great Commission to go into all the world, but to realize too that we have to do it together and the opportunities we have, the beauty of that, and then walking together to give each of us a sense of identity and belonging and purpose that's grounded in who Jesus is and what he invites us into. And so with that, let's pray.